daf is by Basar daf Tzadi Dalid. We left off at the Mishnah on the bottom of daf Tzadi Gimel and Beis. Mishnah is going to discuss when you buy something, you buy produce, and there happens to be some dirt or some impurities mixed in with the produce. How much is an acceptable amount? What percentage is an acceptable amount of dirt or impurity mixed in with the produce? And the Gemara is going to discuss: is there a difference between whether the impurity that's mixed in, let's say, with your wheat is some beans, some kitnis, or some dirt? Does it make a difference whether it's something that would otherwise be usable in a different context, or it's complete garbage that's mixed in with your wheat? Would there be a different percentage that would be acceptable based on what item is exactly mixed in? Then the Gemara is going to discuss that even though there is a certain percentage that you accept, that's if you accept it. But if you say, you know, I suspect that there's more than that percentage over here, and therefore I want to sift it out, and I want to see exactly how much dirt is here, then you're able to insist on it being 100% pure. Meaning we don't say that, okay, so you sift it out, and whatever is in excess of the acceptable amount, you get reimbursed for, but whatever is within the acceptable range, you still have to accept. No, once you say that I want to sift it out, then you could sift out everything and demand that it be 100% pure. But the Gemara is going to have a machlokas. That halacha that you're allowed to sift out everything, is that a din or is that a knas? And that discussion, whether it's a din or a knas, makes up the bulk of our daf today, and is also going to go into tomorrow's daf. The Gemara is going to bring 8 rayos to either side, whether it's a din or whether it is a knas, that you can insist on 100% purity once you decide that you're going to sift it out. So let's see the Mishnah. Says the Mishnah on the bottom of daf Tzadi Gimel Amud Beis: Hamocher Perus L'Chavero Hareza Mekabelolav Rova Tino. If a person sells peros to his friend, he's mekabel on himself 1/4 of a kav of dirt for each sa'ah of grain that he's selling. The Rashbam writes, Aval Yoser Mirova Lo. But once you're getting to more than 1/4 of a kav, he will not accept that. That's not an acceptable amount. And we'll see in the Gemara why that is exactly. Is that a din? Is that a knas? That once it's more than a rova, not just that he's not accepting that amount, once it's more than a rova, he's not accepting anything. He wants to, he can insist on it being perfectly pure. Te'enim mekabelav eser mitula'os lemeya. If he's buying te'enim, if he's buying figs, so he's mekabel 10 out of 100 to be mitula'os, to be wormy, to be problematic. The Rashbam points out, v'adin achas la'eser, that this is a percentage issue. It's not about having a large order, and because there's a large order, 10 of them are okay, but if you were having a smaller order of 10, that all of them would have to be perfect? No, if you had 10, then 10% of 10 would be the acceptable amount, which would mean 1 out of 10. One could imagine that one would disagree, that if you're ordering 100, so you don't know exactly how you're going to use each of the 100, so you're just ordering in bulk, so therefore there's an acceptable amount. But if, let's say, you're just trying to pick up breakfast for yourself and your family right now, so you cheshbin out how many, exactly what the order is, how much each person is going to want, and then it turns out that some of it is bad, so that one could have argued that that's not an acceptable amount, that once you're keeping it so small, or one could have argued that when it's a larger order, you can't expect the mocher to sit there and go through one by one individually and make sure that there's nothing wrong with it. But on a smaller order, so if he picks up, you're only ordering a couple of them, if he picks one up and it looks rotten, he should throw it out and give you something else. So the Rashbam tells us that no, neither of those svaros are true. This is a percentage, and regardless of how large or small the order is, this percentage is always the acceptable percentage. Martiv shel yayin mekabel lav eser kosos lemeya. If you're ordering barrels of wine, many barrels of wine, 10 out of 100 barrels can be spoiled. The wine could be sour. Kankanim b'sharon, you're ordering jugs in wine in a certain place. Mekabel lav eser pitzos lemeya. Also, you're mekabel 10 out of 100 to be problematic. The Rambam writes that all of this is only when there's no minag hamakom that we know of. But if there is a minag hamakom, then we always follow the minag hamakom. Meaning, much like like many of the Mishnayos we've been learning the last few prakim, this is all dependent on minhag, and this is a reflective of what their minhag was. B'yemei Rebbe, this was the minhag. Good, says the Gemara, Tani Rav Katina, Rova kitnis lisa'a, that when we say that you accept a rova of impurity in one sa'a of produce, we're talking about a rova of kitnis for each sa'a of grain. As Rashbam explains, Harova tinofetz masnisin lav ba'afuris mayri. When we say that there's a quarter of a kav of impurity, we're not talking about dirt and rocks. Da'afuris rova lo machalinish, a rova kitnis l'sashal tva. Person's not going to be mochal dirt and rocks, a rova of dirt and rocks in his grain. He's going to be mochal a rova of kitnis in his dirt and grain. So says Gemara, va'afuris lo. Is that true? That if there's a rova kav of dirt in your sa'a of grain, you're not going to accept that. Vamir Rabba Bar Chia katusva'a mishmei de Rabba borer tzror migrono shel chavero nosin lo demei chitin, that if you pick out a rock from someone else's wheat, you owe him the demei chitin, you owe him the value of that volume of wheat, meaning even though all you did is picked out rocks, but you owe him the value of you take the volume of the rocks that you picked out and you owe him the amount of money that wheat in such volume would cost. And why is that you owe him that value? So the Rosh Hashanah writes on the top, Sharei evchisu b'midah diyu avamazman le'im hachitin ta'afroris mekabel lokeach, because he could have sold that as wheat, meaning since there's a certain acceptable amount of dirt and rocks that are allowed to be mixed in with the wheat, he could have sold the whole thing for the price of wheat. Now that you remove those rocks, he's not allowed to put them back in, so now he's out money. Now he's not going to be able to sell them for the value of wheat. That's what the Rosh Hashanah writes, avalach sur la'arivin yachel. He certainly can't put it back in to hashta osa avla biyadayim, because that would be considered doing an avla directly. Uksiv lo sasu avel v'gam lokech lo mochel el mashen esarv me'atzma metuva bal korch shemocher. And also the lokech may be mochel in a certain amount of dirt, a certain amount of rocks. That's if it just happens, meaning it happened accidentally. There was no intention to try to deceive him, to try to cheat him. But now that someone has picked out the dirt and the rocks, for you to put that back in, not only is it an iser that you're doing an avel, but it's beyond that. It's the lokeach is not going to be mochel that anymore. He's not mochel when you purposely put something in there. Ukshaborer atzor mashlechutz hezik biyadayim hu shosun tzoros hayushavim lo kamochitin. So when you take out that rock and you throw it out, you are directly damaging him, because that is valuable to him, like wheat would be. V'inami lo chashivi lehezegamer. And then the Rosh Pam says, and even if you don't want to consider it real hezek biyadayim, because after all, you're not destroying his wheat, you're taking rocks out of his wheat, so you may argue that that's not really called hezek biyadayim. What you've taken out is worth nothing, it's rocks. L'chayiv miyam mishum dina degarmi, but at least we should be mechayiv him mishum dina degarmi. This is at least indirect damage that's direct enough to be chayiv for. Kigon asarif shosof shel chavero. Just like if you have a star that says that someone owes you $100 and I burn that shtar, the shtar is worth a piece of paper, it's not worth anything, but it's the medina to garmi, I'm going to be chayiv, because now you're not going to be able to collect the $100. The Rashbam gives other examples of garmi. This is costing him money even though it looks like what you're taking is worthless. And says Rashbam, and when it comes to Dina de Garmi, we paskin, you have to pay. We hold like the sheet of Remeir that da in Dina de Garmi. What differentiates Garmi from Grama? The halach is by Grama ben Ezek and your pater with indirect damage, your pater, what makes Grama different from Garmi? So Rashbam goes on to say, and that's the $1 million question, the sugya of indirect damage. If you go through Shas and you list all the cases that the Gemara refers to as grama, and the Gemara says, therefore you're potter from. And all the cases that it refers to as garmi, where a mayor would say you're chayiv, because it's indirect, but more direct than grama, you have a hard time figuring out what makes the garmi cases more direct than the grama cases. So the Rishonim all struggle with this. They all work on this. And the Rashbam is no different. He also works on this. So Rashbam writes, v'grama b'nizakin d'kaimelon d'pater, haynu kigon sholeach ha-sabair b'yacher shotav v'katan. He says, you know, a classic example of grama is you give a fire to a child, and then the child goes and burns a building down. She'ahezik nikr avleinu osu sabiyadayim, elo gorem achshav shiyavo hazik memela li achar zman. That's grama, because while the hezik is clear and obvious, the damage is very clear, but you're not doing anything right now, biyadayim. When you're giving the fire to the katan, nothing is happening at that moment. It's only lachar zman, it's only at some later time that the damage is happening. Avaldina de garmi biyadayim humazik, elshein hezik nikr. By garmi, it's the reverse. The hezik is not even nikr. You don't see that there was any damage on it. I took some rocks out of your wheat. You should say thank you. So the hezik is not nicker at all, but it's happening immediately. The second I took those rocks out of your wheat, you're now not able to sell that amount, that same volume of wheat. You're not able to charge the same price. So whereas grama, the Rashbam says, is where the hezek is clear, but it's on a time delay. With garmi, there's no time delay, but the hezek doesn't even have to be perfectly clear. That is the subject of the difference between grama and garmi came up much earlier in the Masechta. It was a Tosos on Daf Chaf Beis Amud Beis, where Tosos discusses what the difference is between grama and garmi, and Tosos suggested three possibilities. So Rabbeinu Yitzchak suggests that dina de garmi is chayiv is when you yourself do the hezek l'mamun chavero. That's garmi. Grama is it happens through a third party. Another possibility says that garmi is mishas maisa baha hezek, that it happens at the time that you do it, which sounds like what the Rashbam is saying, like that second possibility. The third possibility, and probably the easiest one to accept, that Tosfos mentions over there on Daf Chav Beis Amud Beis, is the Shita of the Ritzba, that says, Dina de garmi havi mitam knas, kedemuchach b'Yerushalmi, l'chein v'lkach kol hezek ha-matzri v'ragi lavo, kansu chachamim. That the whole idea of garmi, it's not that there's something fundamentally different about the cases of garmi than about the cases of grama. Garmi is no more direct than grama. It's just that they're all really grama. All the indirect cases are equally indirect. But some of them are more common and some of them are less common. In the more common cases, the ones that come up more frequently, the Chacham thought it's kedai to make a knas, that it's worthwhile to punish the person and make sure that he pays for it so that it doesn't become even more common, so that it doesn't become something that people take unfair advantage of and damage each other in these indirect ways. But in grama cases, they're the types of indirect damage that never really happen anyway. So we're not concerned that people are going to take unfair advantage of it. That's how the Ritzba quoted in Tosfos suggests to be mechalik between grama and garmi. But again, that seems to be different than the Rashbam. Now, if you look at Tosfos on the top over here, nosin lo demei chitin, pirish rivam, haynu k'reb shimon dam davar agarim l'mamon k'mamon dami. Now, what happened? I pulled rocks out of his wheat, so I now owe him that volume of wheat, the value of that volume of wheat. Why? Because the rocks themselves aren't worth anything, but they are a davar agorim l'mamon. What makes them a davar? So another major shas topic that Tosfos brings up, that it's not about grama garmi, this is about davar agorim l'mamon. It doesn't have inherent value, but it's something that could have earned him money. So by selling it together with the rest of the wheat, and we're assuming that davar agorim l'mamon is k'mamon dami. That's the sheet of Rabbi Shimon. Where does that sheet of Rabbi Shimon come up? The mechayev begazal chametz va'avra lafa pesach, that if someone steals chametz and it was avra lafa pesach, that's called the davar agorim l'mamon, because in order for me to fulfill my obligation of returning that which I stole, I can return the actual chametz itself, even though it has no value because it's chametz avra lafa pesach, so it's aser, but it's a davar agorim l'mamon. If you destroy this chametz, I will then have to pay the value that it had before Pesach. Now that if you don't destroy it, I could just give back this valueless chametz. So that's called a davar agorim l'mamon, and if you destroy it, therefore you're going to have to pay me the value that it had before Pesach, because that's the value it has to me, since I'll be able to use this as payment. That's a classic example of Davar HaGarim L'Mamun. Rav Zilberstein in Chashuk Yechemet has a discussion over here about Chametz Shavalof HaPasach. He talks about a case where Reuven had some Chametz and he couldn't find a guy, he couldn't find the rabbi to make a shliach, to sell the Chametz to a guy. He didn't know what to do, so he was matneh the Chametz to his friend Shimon, and he figured Shimon will make a Mechiras Chametz, so it'll be included in Shimon's sale of the chametz. So zachon adam shol befanav, he made a kinyan that with another person, please be kona this chametz on behalf of Shimon. The only thing is, he never told Shimon a word about it, that he's being makna the chametz to Shimon. As it turns out, Shimon never sold this chametz that year because Shimon didn't have any chametz that year. He decided he was going to get rid of everything. We're not really supposed to, we try to sell anyway, even when we do get rid of everything. But Shimon decided he's going to get rid of everything. He'll do bittel, whatever. So he's not going to sell his chametz. So now you have a question: is this considered chametz shavalof pesach? Reuven certainly can't eat it because he was, but can Shimon eat it? Can Shimon enjoy this chametz after Pesach? So Zilberstein has a very interesting take on this. He says, you know, the Shulchan Aruch is explicit that chametz shayishol shavalof pesach is asur ba'anah, even if it was avrelav pesach b'shogeg or even ba'ones. But the Mishnah Berurah says, what does ones mean? It means that I really wanted to get rid of it. I ran out of time. You know, something came up. I couldn't get rid of it. That's an ones. But let's say, says Rav Zilberstein, it's a case where not just that you didn't have time to get rid of it, you had no way of knowing that it existed. You know, like an example he gives from the Beis Hillel in Yaradeya, Simon Kuflam and Beis, the Beis Hillel talks about a case where I left some flour in a certain location and a guy went and mixed that flour with water. I had no idea that he turned my flour, not talking about like the bleached flour where our flour nowadays is chametz gomer, talking about like a flour just ground up wheat. There was nothing wrong with the flour. And then the guy mixed it with water and he turned it into chametz. I had no way of knowing that the chametz even existed. That might be considered an ones gamur, where a person is not responsible at all. So he says, it could be that Shimon's allowed to have it in this place. How's he supposed to know Reuven's being makna him chametz? That's an ones gamur. Maybe the knas of chametz shavalof pesach won't apply in that case. I was just intrigued by this, that it just came up, because just last night someone came over to me, Amin Chamarev, and told me, every year I get the question about the Girl Scout cookies. For some reason, Girl Scouts always deliver their cookies on Chol HaMoed Pesach. I don't know. You order it a month before, everyone in any office, I was away for Pesach, I come back, and the Girl Scout cookies are sitting on my desk. Every year I get that shot. This time, it was a little bit different. This time, a guy said that... So that I would not think is ones gamur, because you ordered them. So I don't think that's considered ones gamur. But last night a guy said to me that he was away for Pesach, and he comes back, and one of his suppliers, in whatever business he has, sent him as a gift. Sent him a box of cookies. He had no idea. He didn't ask for the box of cookies. They never sent him a box of cookies before. And all the employees, I guess it's a loose, you know, in the office they have a warm relationship and they all share food, I guess. The employees all said, we didn't touch it the whole Pesach because we knew it would bother you. So right after Pesach, they started going for the cookies. They started eating his cookies. So is he allowed to get the hana of giving it to his employees, of sharing it? Is that considered chametz shavalof Pesach? There is an argument to be made that you know, that it's mamish ones gamur, that if you find it, that's on, how's he supposed to even know that they existed? Okay, maybe such an argument to be made. Still, probably better to just get rid of them. So anyway, so that's what Tos is saying over here, that this is considered davar agorim lemamon, and we're assuming like Rabbi Shimon that davar agorim lemamon is kamamon davi. But then Tos says l'ri nira dasi afilu krabanan da hasam vade lav kamamon davi shenu shavu l'shum adam klum ella what's the gersa ella legazlan. You know, in the case where I stole chametz and then it was avar alav haPesach, this chametz is worthless to everybody except for the guy who stole it, who can pater himself by giving it back. But over here, these rocks, when they're mixed in with this wheat, could be sold and resold, and everybody, it has the same value to everybody. So maybe even the Rabbanan, who think davar garim l'mamon is lav k'mamon dami, that's when it's only garim l'mamon to one person. But when it's garim l'mamon to everybody, maybe everyone would agree that that's k'mamon dami. Like, and it's not like Sarif Shtarosov Shal Chavero, because by Sarif Shtarosov Shal Chavero, it's Niyar Bialma, it's just paper that you burnt. And it's not the Chov itself, but over here, it's the item itself that you would be selling. The guy would be selling these rocks. So maybe even the Rabbanan who think Davar Gorm the Mamun is left, the Mamun Damitos says, maybe over here you would have to pay. Okay, but back to our Gemara. What are we talking about over here? The Gemara had said that, yes, you accept a certain amount of impurity with your wheat, but those impurities mean that you accept a certain amount of beans with your wheat, not that you accept to have dirt with your wheat. So the Gemara says, really? Is dirt not considered an acceptable impurity? We learned over here that if someone pulls out the dirt and the rocks from your wheat, he's costing you money, and therefore he's got to pay you for that. So apparently you're allowed to have dirt and rocks also up to a certain percentage in your wheat that you're selling. So the Gemara answers, no, kitnis rova afruris, rova. Afruris pachos mi rova. When we're dealing with kitnis being mixed in, so then we accept up until a rova. But if it's afruris, then it's then pachos mi rova. Then we don't accept a rova akav. Yeah, there could be some dirt and some rocks mixed into your wheat, but not a rova for each saw. It's a different percentage when you're dealing with afruris. So says Gemara, afruris rova lo. And is that true when if it's a rova akav of dirt, would that not be acceptable? Vatanya, we have a brisa amocha peres lechavero chitin mekabel of rova kitnis l'sa'a, that if you're selling wheat, then the guy is mekabel to accept a rova of kitnis for each sa'a. Sa'orim, if he's selling barley, mekabel of rova nishoves l'sa'a, he's accepting upon himself one rova of straw for each sa'a. Adashim, if he's selling lentils, mekabel of rova afruris l'sa'a, he's being mekabel a rova of dirt for each sa'a. So my love, who had in the chitim l'sa'arin, aren't we just giving the most common examples of each min of what you can expect to find with wheat and with barley and with lentils? But it doesn't really matter what it is that's mixed in. Doesn't this imply that even if the dirt was mixed in with the wheat or the barley, lav dafka with the lentils, with the wheat or the barley, would be the same thing? That up until a rova, that's an acceptable amount, a rova. So how can you tell me that only a rova of kitnis is an acceptable amount? Mountain wheat, not a rova of afruris. So Gemara says, no, it's only by adashim that we accept afruris. Shiny adashim to me akar akri luhu. How does one pick adashim when they grow? You uproot them from the ground. So it's part of the process that there's going to be some dirt, there's going to be some soil, there's going to be some rocks that are mixed in. But what's your excuse with wheat? You're selling kernels of wheat. There's no way there should be any dirt mixed in with that. So it is dafka by adashim. So it says more, okay, so let's make the diuk the other way then. Elatayim adashim to me akar akri luhu avuchit yusari lo. Oh, good. So we see that by adashim, we accept a certain amount of dirt because that's the nature of adashim. When you pick it from the ground, you're yanking it out of the ground together with some dirt. But if it were chitim or sa'orim, if it were wheat or barley, then dirt would be unacceptable. So tifshut mina, chito sari da'afruris, lo makabel. Oh, good. So now we have a raya in the other direction, that when it's when it comes to wheat, when it comes to barley, you're not makabel anything. You're not makabel any amount of dirt in there. So the Gemara says, no. Li'olam chitim. It could be by wheat and barley you are mekabel a certain amount of dirt, and in that amount might even be the rova akav l'sa. So this is not a proof to anything. It could just be the reason we mentioned dirt in connection to adashim is to teach a chiddush. Adashim etzrichalei desalka daita chamina kivin de miyakar akri luhu yosim erova nami lekabel. I might have thought that whereas by chitim esorim you're willing to accept up until a rova of dirt together with your chitim and sa'orim by your adashim, since you know that it's so common that dirt and rocks are going to be mixed in, that a lokeach would be willing to accept even more. So kamash malan, that's why we dafka want to highlight dafka by adashim that a rova is acceptable, to tell you that yes, just a rova is acceptable, no more than a rova is going to be acceptable when it comes to adashim. That's why we mention it. Now we keep talking about that one thing we were very clear about is that when it comes to wheat, if there's kitnis mixed in, so that's up until a rova, that's perfectly acceptable. This of course reminds us of the halacha that we just had over Pesach of kitnis. The Rama writes that even though the Shulchan Aruch is mefurash, that if a person wants to make a dish out of kitnis that are not bali dechimutz, mutar lasus mem tavshil, you want to cook rice, you want to make things with with rice products or with any other kidneys, perfectly fine. But the Rama says v'yesh osrim v'aminig ba'ashkenaz la'achmir. There are some that asr and the minig is to be machmir. Why? So a couple of reasons given by the Mishnah Brura for this chumra. But the very first one, the Mishnah Brura in Tafnun Gimel Sifkat and Vav writes v'tam chumra zu mishum shalafa'amim tevua ma'orav b'minei kidneys v'yef shalavarer yafe. That very often there's going to be some mixture between the kidneys and actual grain, and it's impossible to really sort it all out. So because it's going to be so difficult to sort out the kidneys from the grain, we always assume that there might be some kidneys mixed in, and therefore va'asi l'dei chimutz kishiyefem o yivashlem. It's going to lead to chimutz when you bake them, when you bake or cook the kidneys, because there's going to be some trace amount of grain that's mixed in. Furthermore, he says, you know, the other reason he gives is that the way one makes kidneys, the way one can make a rice bread that looks just like bread made with grain, so it will be confusing for people. But that first reason, that we're actually afraid of mixtures, so that's exactly what our Gemara is assuming, that was standard, that together with wheat there would be a mixture of kidneys. This is the reverse, that together with kidneys there would be a mixture of wheat. Whether it's because they used the same bags or it came from the same fields or whatever it was, it was apparently very commonplace in the times of Chazal that there would be these kinds of mixtures. We even had Bismanenu, you know, even those poskim, which seems to be the majority at this point, who hold that quinoa is not kidneys, but still you have to buy specific brands, because there are places in the world where they're processing quinoa, and there is a concern of actual grain being mixed in. So that's why they're specific about doing the research to make sure that it comes from certain places where there is no such concern. Okay, Amar Rav Huna, Imbal Nafa, so new statement now. So now that we know that there's going to be a certain acceptable amount of dirt that you have to that can be mixed in with one's grain, and the lokeh can't have a problem with that. There's a certain amount that is acceptable. So Amar Rav Huna Imbal Nafa. So let's say the lokeh takes one look at the wheat that you just sold him, and he says, "There's no way. It's just a rov hakav of dirt. This thing is filthy. There's way too much dirt in here. I want to be menapa. I want to sift it all out, and I want to see exactly what's here." So Imbal Nafa. Once he does that, says Rav Huna, menapa es kulo. We don't say, "Oh, he sifts it out to the point where anything in excess of a rov hakav he gets reimbursed for." No, he can be menapa es kulo. That every last piece of dirt he can get reimbursed for. So amri la dina va amri la knasa. But it's a machlokas why that's the case. Is this a din or is this a knas? Amri la dina mandiyav zuzer pirishapiri yahiv. Some say this is a din because when you're paying money, you don't want any dirt. You're paying for good payrolls. It's just that we're not going to be matriach a person to sift out very small amounts of dirt. But once he's going through the tircha of sifting it out, so you can say, well, I was paying for viable produce. I wasn't paying for any dirt whatsoever. Okay, it's normally not worth my time to sift it out if it's just a rova akav of in a sa. But once it is worth my time to sift it out, I'm sifting it all out. And that's my din. That's what I'm entitled to. So that's the understanding that it's din. V'rova lo tarachinish. It's just that for a rova, I'm not going to be matriach myself to find all the impurities. But Yoser Mirova, Tarachinish, if it's more than a rova, a person will be matriach himself to find the impurities. V'kivin to Tarach, Tarach v'kulei. Good, so once he's being Tarach, he'll be Tarach completely and he'll go try to find every impurity. That's if you assume that it's din. But V'armi l'knasa, others say that no, it's not a din, it's a knas over here. Really, that the rova is an acceptable amount of dirt and rocks to be mixed in with the chitim. Rova shchiach, Yoser lo shchiach. The reason that that's an acceptable amount is because it's very common, without any sort of dishonest behavior, without any sort of trying to deceive the lokeach, trying to pass off something that's not viable as good produce. It just happens. It gets mixed in. A certain amount of impurities get mixed in with the pure produce that you're trying to sell him. But more than a rova, that's not shchiach. That doesn't happen by accident. We assume v'iyu hu da'ariv. If it's more than a rova, we assume the mocher is mixing that in in on purpose to make a couple of extra bucks. Good. Once he's going to do that, the kivin darav kansu rabban bekule. Since he's mixing some in on his own, the rabban are going to make a knas that he's going to have to lose out on even the acceptable amount. He's going to have to lose out. But really, min hadin, a rova should always be acceptable. So if it was more than a rova, we should just be allowed to sift out whatever is more than the rova. But because we suspect that he was doing this on purpose, so we're going to make him sift out everything, and he's now going to have to provide a perfectly pure product, and the lokech is going to be reimbursed for every last ounce of impurity. So now the Gemara is going to bring eight rayas. Which side is correct? Is this a knas or is this a din? So first, meisve, and the Rashbam points out the meisve, this meisve, alishna kamadarmile dina kaparich velo knasa. There's a kasha on the shita that holds that it's a din, and not a kasha on the shita that holds that it's a knas. So meisve, kol sa sheishba rova miminacher yimait. Over here we're talking about a different halacha. We're talking about kalayim over here, that you're buying seeds to plant, but there are other seeds of another min mixed in together with it. So if you have a sa'a that has a rova of another min mixed in with it, you might, you need to take out some of the other seeds, so that you will have less than a rova mixed in. So savrua de rova de klayim kiosim rova de hacha. Now we're working with the assumption that a rova of klayim is problematic, so that would be the equivalent in our case of more than a rova of dirt mixed in with your wheat, which would be the problematic amount. Vikatani, and yet what does it say? Yemait. It says that you have to be, that you're yemait, which means you bring it down to the acceptable amount. So apparently, bringing it down to the acceptable amount is good enough. So it says, look, rova de klayim ki rova de hachadami. By klayim, a rova is the same, is the equivalent of a rova of dirt, meaning a rova of klayim is actually an acceptable amount in klayim. It would not be considered klayim, it would be considered batel if you only have a rova within your sa'a of klayim. Well, then why do you have to do anything by the klayim case? Why can't you just leave it be? No, mishum chumra de klayim. That's an extra chumra that we have in the dinim of klayim, that we're not even going, that lichadchila, we don't want you to plant something that even has an acceptable amount of another min, even an amount that would become batel in another min. If you look at the Rashbam, the Katani Yema'et, so the Rashbam writes, Yamidenu al shira batel. Meaning the point is, you don't get rid of all of the other min, you just get it to the point where it will become batel. Dainu pachas mirova. V'yafal gav disr klayim chamerhu, shein beiz nichol nafkia iser, afilu achilo machmrin be'lemeimar, dekima detarach litrach bekuli nafal sukulo. So if by klayim, which is an iser that beiz din can't mess around with, still we don't make you get out every last bit of the foreign min. So kolshkin gabe mechira de kail shari bezin yichol lahafkir mamon shalze lechavera, where you have a din of hafkir bezin hafkir when you're talking in din of mamonis like by us. So all the more so davalu lememri yamit viamidenu al shira batal dain rova. We should for sure say that you should just get rid of whatever the excess amount is, but you should still keep it. But the dirt that's acceptable, you're allowed to keep. So that was the Gemara's kasha. So the Gemara's answer was that no, by the klayim, mishum chumra de klayim, we were really, a rova is an acceptable amount of klayim, and we're still requiring to be mema'it as a chumra of klayim, not as a kula of klayim, that we're only requiring to be mema'it and not to clear it out entirely. So in fact, the Gemara further, ihachi, ema seifa, but then what do you do about the seifa? The seifa says, Rabbi Yossi Omer, yavur, that you need to be borer out every last bit of it. Well, Iyamir Bishlama Kiyoser Merova Tinofes Dami Ba'akam Lifli. Now, if you're going to say that a rova in the world of Kalayim is the same as more than a rova in the world of Mecha Chumemker, meaning having a rova of a foreign min within the world of Kalayim is unacceptable, if that's the pshat, and then you have a machlokas in the world of Kalayim, do you only need to get it down to an acceptable amount, or do you need to sift it all out, get rid of all of it? So then I understand the machlokas. Tanakama savar lo kansina hatera atu isura. Tanakama will say, we're not going to make a knas, you just need to get it down to the acceptable amount. Rabbi Yossi savar kansinan. And Rabbi Yossi says, no, we're going to make a knas. If you have an unacceptable amount, you have to get rid of all of it. It's not enough to just bring it down to an acceptable amount. Eliyamit Karova Dami. But if you hold that that having a rova of klayim is really already an acceptable level, Amayavur. I understand chumra de klayim. You want to get it to an even lower percentage of a foreign min. Yeah, it's at an acceptable amount where the foreign min would be batel, but it's too close. So we want you to get it down to an even more acceptable amount, to something that's even further away from any chashash. But why on earth would you have to be borer out all of it? You mamish did nothing wrong. You already have something that's acceptable. So the Gemara explains, Hasam hayna time de Rabbi Yossi, mishum de mechzi ki mekayim klayim, that it just looks bad. That once you're being mema'it, once you're ready, meaning since everyone's going to agree that if you have a rova of a foreign min, it's not in your mixed in, and it's going to look like klayim, even though it's really acceptable, it really is batel, we're going to make you do something. We're going to make you take something out. Once you're taking something out, if you leave anything behind, that already looks like you're being mekayim klayim. Well, if you didn't have to do anything, you had a trace of a foreign min, a trace amount of a foreign min, and you didn't have to do anything, you just planted it, so that's fine. We would allow the trace amount of a foreign min. But once it's more than a trace amount, and we're making you do something about it, we're making you take something out, so then we're going to make you take it all out. Good, so that was all raya number one. So now says Gemara raya number two, tashema. And this raya, the Rashbam points out, this Tashma Shnayim Shevkidu, Rashbam says, Alishna de Knasa Parach, that this is going on the Lashon, that it's a Knas. So let's see the raya. Shnayim Shevkidu Eitzalecha, two people give a Pikadon to one person. Zeman of Zemasayim. So Reuven is trusted with both the Pikadon of Shimon and the Pikadon of Levi. Shimon gave him, one of them gave him $100, one of them gave him $200. The only thing is, Reuven doesn't remember who gave him the 100, who gave him the 200. So Zelmer Masayim Shali, Zelmer Masayim Shali. Shimon says, yeah, I gave you the 200. And Levi says, no, I gave you the 200. Each one is claiming that they gave him the more valuable one. So what should Reuven do? Nosin lezemana lezemana v'ashar yeh munachat sheyava Eliyahu. He gives each of them 100, and the rest is munachat sheyava Eliyahu. The rest has to wait until Eliyahu Anavi comes. So what do we see from here? Bottom line is, apparently, this, if there's ever a place to make a knas, to punish these people, one of them is definitely lying to him. So we should punish the guy and not give him back anything. And yet we're giving him back the acceptable amount. We're giving him back the $100. So don't you see that we don't make such knasos? Meaning in our case as well, if there's a rova, that's an acceptable amount. So even though the guy did something wrong, he mixed in more dirt and more rocks into his wheat, so just get it down to the acceptable amount. We shouldn't be making a knas where we make him remove all of the dirt and all of the rocks. So isn't this exactly the same? So Gemara says, no, it's not at all the same. Hachi hashta. How can you compare our case of the dirt and the rocks mixed in with the wheat to this case of the two people who gave a pikadon? Hasam vade mana lamar mana lamar. Over there, we know for sure that each guy is owed at least $100. Hacham miyemer delav kuleya ruve arif. Over here, do we know for sure that there was a rova that got accidentally mixed in? For all we know, all of it was purposely put in there to cheat his customers. So it makes sense to make a knas that he's got to get rid of all of the dirt, all of the rocks, because that could have all been a problem of him trying to cheat his customers. So that's you can't compare the two cases. So it says, okay, Tashma Misefa. Raya number three from the Seifa over there. Amar Rabbi Yossi comments, Imkein, Mahif Sararmai. If you can give each guy $100 back, the guy who lied loses nothing, because he can lie, and worse comes to worse, he'll get back exactly what he's really owed. Ela kol yeh munachat sheyava Eliyahu. Rabbi Yossi says, you got to punish him entirely. All of it has to be put aside at sheyava Eliyahu. So Gemara says, no, hachi asha, that's a bad comparison to our case as well. Hasam vadei ikaramai, hacha miyemer da ruvei arif. Because in that case, one of them is definitely a liar. One of them only gave 100 and is claiming 200. Over here, it's a little bit better, because it could be that the guy didn't mix anything in. It could be that he is not a liar at all. So we don't know for sure that we have a ramai over here. We don't know for sure that we have a deceitful person. So tashma, another raya. Shtar sheyesh bo ribis. If you have a shtar that has ribis written into it, that someone has to pay interest. Kontzno, so we make a knas on such a shtar. Ve'inu gove, lo es hakeren, ve'lo es haribis divrei meir. Rameir says, not only can you not collect the ribis, you can't even collect the keren. Oh, so we see that we make a knas, that you even lose out the acceptable part. So over here also, you should even lose out the acceptable rova. So says Mar now, hachi ashta, hasa mishas ksiva, hu da avad le shuma, hacha miyim. Yimer to Ruvei Arif. Now, over there, we know for sure that the guy did an Avera by writing a shtar that had ribis. So, yeah, we're going to make a Knas, even on the acceptable part. But over here, we don't know for sure that the guy did anything wrong. So, Tashmami Sefer, the Gemara says, let's bring a right from the Sefer. The Chamram, Govas, a Karen, Veino, Govas, a ribis. The Chamram say, you can be Govah the Karen. The acceptable part is acceptable. It's only the ribis that you can't be Govah. So, Gemara says, no, Hachiashi, you can't compare that either. Hasam Vade Karna de Aterahu, Hacham Yemer de Kuli Lo Ruvei Arif. Because over there, when I lend you money, I can charge you the amount of money that I lent you. That's the keren is heter. It's just my avera wasn't including a ribbis amount. But over here, it could be that there was no acceptable amount, that he put all of this dirt and all of these rocks in, and therefore maybe we're going to make a bigger knas over here. Okay, Beis Shem, we'll pick up at the sixth raya tomorrow at Tashma. Good.